Support for Alaska Public Media On Demand comes from SIRI, an Alaska Native corporation with operations and investments spanning 5 continents, 45 states, and 2 U.S. territories.
And so I was very disappointed to see that he didn't vote to restore our collective bargaining rights.
Congressman Nick Begich votes against the House bill to restore union rights for federal employees. From Alaska Public Media, this is statewide news on Alaska News Nightly for Thursday, December 18th. Good evening, I'm Wesley Early. Also tonight, Juneau's getting really cold tonight, and experts say it'll be around for a while.
It's looking like the numbers are shaping up for this, you know, to be the coldest we've seen in over 30 years.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly. It's been a rough year for Alaska's 15,000 federal employees. Along with job losses and funding uncertainty, in March, President Trump signed an executive order to take away union protections from a large swath of the federal workforce. The U.S. House gave public employee unions a ray of hope last week, but as Alaska Public Media Washington correspondent Liz Ruskin reports, Alaska's congressman wasn't part of it.
The Republican-led House delivered a rare rebuke of Trump and passed a bill to restore union rights for federal employees. 20 Republicans joined Democrats to pass it. Alaska Congressman Nick Begich wasn't among them. Stephanie Rice, a federal worker from Anchorage, says she was surprised by his vote, given Alaska's high number of federal jobs.
That's 4.6% of the state's total employment. That's a huge chunk of his constituents that are directly impacted by this legislation. And so I was very disappointed to see that he didn't vote to restore our collective bargaining rights.
Rice is president of her union, National Federation of Federal Employees, Local 1945. She works for the Bureau of Land Management's National Operations Center, but says she's speaking for herself and her union, not the agency. Begich didn't respond to an interview request nor provide a statement explaining why he voted no. But the Republican who led the House debate against the bill, Representative James Comer of Kentucky, said Trump is trying to get rid of the union contracts to provide more effective personnel management and streamline the disciplinary system for federal employees.
The reality is that pre-existing union agreements the president never signed onto can subvert these efforts. They provide barriers to accountability beyond basic employee protections that exist in law.
Begich's vote and his position on organized labor more generally align with most Republicans in Congress. But it marks a departure for Alaska's congressional delegation. The AFL-CIO ranked Alaska's Dan Sullivan and Lisa Murkowski as the Republican senators who most often voted pro-union in the last Congress. And unions were big contributors to the late Congressman Don Young's political campaigns.
Congressman Young always said that the unions weren't the enemy, they were the canary in the coal mine, telling Congress when things were wrong in the facilities or the agency.
David Traver is chief steward of AFGE Local 3028, which represents employees at the Veterans Affairs Medical Center in Anchorage. He says Begich hasn't shown an inclination to be the champion of organized labor the way Young was. Begich last year won the endorsement of the National Right to Work Committee, a counterforce to union power. The AFL-CIO endorsed his opponent. Unions like the one at the Anchorage VA are still representing employees, but Trump's order in essence tore up their contract. Travers says that leaves workers vulnerable to unfair treatment.
I will tell you, it was an insult.
The House-passed bill to restore those union contracts goes next to the Senate, but labor leaders say a likelier route for becoming law would be as part of a government spending bill next year. Reporting from Washington, I'm Liz Ruskin.
The Fairbanks City Council voted down a letter of agreement Monday that aimed to keep a long-standing paramedic training partnership afloat. That's after the Fairbanks Firefighters Union had already rejected the proposed letter, partially because of safety concerns related to training multiple students at the same time. The council was also confronted with the quandary last month and chose to postpone their final vote. That was in hopes the City, Union, and University of Alaska Fairbanks Community and Technical College could find a solution amid disagreement about how the partnership should function. City Chief of Staff Michael Sanders said Monday that nothing has changed since then. He says the fact that the firefighters union still isn't on board means, for now, approval from the city council wouldn't accomplish much of anything.
To be honest, I didn't put a lot of time in this because it's a dead issue. There's nothing, literally nothing that we can do right now on this.
Sanders says the different parties are still communicating, but that relationship, quote, is not repaired enough to be able to move forward. In August, the Council and Firefighters Union agreed to a new contract, which was the product of lengthy negotiations and federal arbitration. That contract nixed the paramedic partnership. At last month's council meeting, the Fairbanks Firefighters Union's president said union members supported the idea of training students from the UAF Technical College, but he said members reported getting overloaded with trainees and said they wanted a more structured training plan. During that November meeting, the medical director for the program at the Technical College said it produces about a third of the paramedics trained in the state. And he said that the end of the partnership will pose problems for 8 currently enrolled students who need to reach their required 240 hours of field training. On Monday, council members expressed disappointment for those specific students and about the dispute not getting figured out. Here's Councilmember Jerry Cleworth.
I'm kind of saddened by this whole thing because it's a longstanding tradition that we work with them.
Council members voted down the letter of agreement 4-2. A federal grand jury has indicted 2 Alaska state troopers shown on body camera video beating, tasing, and pepper spraying a Kenai man in a case of mistaken identity. KDLL's Ashlyn O'Hara has more.
Joseph Miller and Jason Woodruff are each charged with violating the man's civil rights. Neither were arrested following the federal indictment. In a news release, the U.S. Attorney's Office says Miller had no legal justification for the violent arrest. And prosecutors say Woodruff illegally used his police dog to bite the man when he did not pose a threat. The arrest was captured on body cameras. The state brought charges against Miller and Woodruff last summer after a routine use of force review. State prosecutors say body camera footage shows Woodruff and Miller tasing, pepper spraying, beating, and having their police dog maul Kenai man Ben Tika during an arrest near Dobbins Beck Park. The state charging document says troopers did not ask for Tika's name during the arrest and did not learn until later that the man they'd arrested was Ben and not his cousin, Garrett Tika. Garrett had an outstanding warrant for failing to appear for a 10-day jail sentence for driving with a revoked license. The lawyer representing Ben Tika in the state case says he underwent more than $40,000 worth of medical procedures as a result of the arrest, which left him with a concussion and a broken clavicle. Miller is no longer employed by the state of Alaska. Jason Woodruff remains employed by the department, but has been on leave since the botched arrest. The union contract that covers public safety employees in Alaska says employees charged with a crime over professional conduct will be put on unpaid leave. The police dog involved in the arrest was also released from the department. If convicted in the federal case, Miller and Woodruff each face up to 10 years in prison. James Cockrell is the commissioner of the Alaska Department of Public Safety. He was quick to condemn Miller and Woodruff's conduct after reviewing the body-worn camera footage last summer. In a statement to KDLL, Cockrell called the alleged civil rights violations deeply concerning and contrary to the department's values. He wrote, quote, "While this is an unfortunate day for the Alaska State Troopers, the alleged actions of these two individuals do not reflect the professionalism of the hundreds of state troopers and DPS employees who serve Alaskans with integrity every day, often in the most challenging conditions in the United States." Cockrell said the department continues to cooperate with state and federal prosecutors. Woodruff's attorney declined to discuss the case. Miller's did not respond to a request for comment. Tuesday's announcement comes as Woodruff and Miller await trial in their respective state criminal cases. They are each facing a first-degree assault charge. In September, a judge declined a request for Miller to dismiss the state's case against him. Miller and Woodruff are scheduled to go to trial next year. Reporting in Kenai, I'm Ashlyn O'Hara.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, how to avoid dry skin in the winter. And the advice, it isn't what you think.
Dr. Miller does not recommend using lotions.
What? How come?
That's ahead. Stay with us. Fairbanks police are looking for a suspect who allegedly shot and wounded a person Monday night in the Fairbanks Eastside Safeway store. KUAC's Tim Ellis reports.
Fairbanks Police spokesperson Teal Soden says officers went to the Safeway on College Road after getting a report of a shooting there at around 10 p.m.
It was an incident where one individual had been shot and injured. We do not currently have the suspect in custody, but we are actively working leads.
Soden said for now the department isn't releasing much information about the incident and they're withholding the suspect and victim's names. But she added that the investigators suspect that the shooter went into the store looking for a specific person.
From what we know now, we do not believe this was a random incident.
Soden said anyone with information about the incident should contact Fairbanks Police Lieutenant Amy Davis at 907-450-6500. For KUAC News, I'm Tim Ellis.
Alaska has one of the highest rates of fatal drug overdoses in the country. But addiction treatment services in Southeast are limited. As KRBD's Hunter Morrison reports, the Ketchikan Indian community is looking to change that by opening the state's first tribally led addiction healing center.
About 15 miles north of town, Second Waterfall gushes into a rocky shoreline. The natural wonder can be seen and heard from inside the clubhouse of the former Salmon Falls Resort, a longtime tourist destination for fishing, dining, and lodging. A long and blue staircase out the door leads directly to the large fall.
Quite the waterfall.
The 11-acre facility has gone through many hands over the years and was foreclosed on in November. The Ketchikan Indian community purchased the property in cash 2 days after finding out it was up for grabs.
It met all of the qualifications we needed to be able to really move forward on a wellness center.
That's KIC President Gloria Burns. She says the new facility will blend Western and traditional healing practices that will focus on an individual's needs.
We're really excited about the opportunity it's going to give our people to reconnect to the ocean and to the land and to vision with our tribal citizens about what healing looks like to us.
Burns says that approach is modeled after the tribally run Didgwalik Healing Center in Washington State. She says opening a facility to help people struggling with substance misuse has been a part of KIC's strategic plan for nearly a decade.
For some people, they are going to say that my disassociation from not speaking my language is so profound that I can't get by it, and that is my path to healing. And some will say to us, I dream of fish every day in the morning, Gloria. I need to be on the water. I need to be providing for my family.
The recently purchased property is equipped with a restaurant, boat dock, bunkhouses, and guest rooms that can sleep more than 50 people. And there's room to develop more amenities, like traditional food gardens.
Our family members and our loved ones who are in this state of addiction, it's not who they are. It's who this system, this drug, has taken who they are from us. And so how do we restore within them the ability to identify in a positive way about themselves and to connect with the land and connect with their family?
Burns has seen dozens of people on the island struggle with addiction over the years. A 2020 study found that addiction treatment is one of the most pressing health needs in the area. But the island has just two addiction treatment facilities. And Southeast's only detox center in Juneau closed about a year ago. Unlike some tribally run healing centers, which are only open to tribal members or native people, KIC's new facility will be open to everyone.
We recognize that it takes the entire village to make somebody well. And we're not going to be, you can't make a body well by just making the hand and the arm and the foot well. You have to make everything well.
The tribe is still fleshing out a plan for what the healing center will look like and how it will operate. Burns says they also need to fix up the facility's plumbing and remodel some buildings to tailor it to their needs. Burns hopes the healing center will be open to the public next fall. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Hunter Morrison.
In Juneau, officials say to be prepared to see frigid temperatures stretching into the next couple of weeks. And as KTOO's Alex Solomon reports, a Taku wind is on its way this week.
The National Weather Service issued a cold weather advisory and a high wind warning starting Thursday evening. The forecast shows that a Tohoku wind event could start as early as Thursday evening. The strongest gusts of 60 miles per hour or more are predicted to blow through Saturday. Wind chill temperatures could reach as low as negative 15 degrees Fahrenheit. Without wind chill, temperatures are expected to range from the teens to negative 3 degrees Fahrenheit through Monday. Jeff Garman is the meteorologist in charge at the National Weather Service in Juneau.
We could see some periods, especially where we have the higher winds, that frostbite's going to be a real danger. And that's where dressing in layers, covering up is important.
He says the wind could also whip up freezing ocean spray, which can cover boats in ice and make maritime travel dangerous. And Garman says this December is on track to break weather records.
It's looking like the numbers are shaping up for this, you know, to be the coldest we've seen in over 30 years in southeast Alaska. It's a little unusual to go through like a 2 to almost 3 week period and be as cold as we are.
He says typically cold snaps in Juneau last just a few days instead of weeks. Garman says this one is caused by a consistent flow of strong polar air moving in from interior Alaska and Canada. In dangerous conditions, officials say it's important to be prepared in case utilities fail. There's been a string of power outages in Juneau this month. Ryan O'Shaughnessy is the city's emergency programs manager. He says to stock up on non-perishable foods, drinking water, blankets, flashlights, and batteries in case the power goes out.
It's really important to be careful using candles for light and to heat your home. That can pretty quickly turn into a fire hazard.
To prevent pipes from freezing and bursting, he says to keep taps dripping. And he suggests keeping extra blankets and warm clothes in the car in case it breaks down. Garman says a possible snowstorm could come through Juneau around Christmas and may bring warmer maritime air that would pull temperatures out of the negatives. But he says it's still too far out to be confident. In Juneau, I'm Alex Solomon.
Over a dozen Southeast Alaska tribal governments have banded together to form a new partnership. The Alliance of Sovereign Tribes of Southeast Alaska was signed into accord last month at the National Congress of American Indians Convention in Seattle. The joint effort, which was months in the making, promotes a unified approach to addressing regional tribal concerns while acknowledging each tribe's individual differences. The accord also highlights the need for annual tribal gatherings and a focus on indigenous values. Gloria Burns is the president of the Ketchikan Indian community. She says the new partnership has already improved communication between the region's tribes.
And as we communicate, then we're going to partner with each other. And when we partner with each other, then we're creating real movement and change with each other.
While organizations like the Alaska Federation of Natives address statewide Native issues, Burns says there were no collaborative efforts to tackle Southeast-specific concerns, like transboundary mining and invasive European green crabs. She says the new alliance also works to uplift individual tribal concerns. Albert Smith is the mayor of the Metlakatla Indian community, the only reservation in Alaska. He says there hasn't been an established partnership of Southeast Alaska tribes in over 20 years.
The importance is tribes helping tribes, working together for a common goal of the betterment of our region and indigenous peoples of our region.
Other tribal governments that signed into the alliance include the Craig Tribal Association, the Organized Village of Cake, and the Central Council of the Tlingit and Haida Indian Tribes of Alaska. Juneau Animal Rescue has finally secured a location for its proposed new animal shelter. On Monday night, the Juneau Assembly unanimously approved leasing a parcel of city property in the Mendenhall Valley to Juneau Animal Rescue to serve as the site of a larger facility for rescued animals. Rick Driscoll, the shelter's executive director, says the approval is a major milestone for making the new shelter a reality.
This was kind of the big step, so we couldn't really launch capital campaign without having land that we can say we're going to build it on. So everything has led up to this point.
The nonprofit organization has been fundraising to construct a newer, updated facility for the last few years. The current shelter off Glacier Highway was built in 1984 and needs extensive repairs. And the shelter also often finds itself at or near capacity for housing dogs and cats. Driscoll says the assembly's approval means the animal rescue can begin narrowing in on a design for the facility and figure out how much they need to fundraise to make it happen. The new proposed facility would have a better ventilation system to help prevent the spread of diseases and more space for cats, dogs, and smaller animals like rodents and reptiles. The shelter is also interested in creating walking trails in the surrounding area for dogs. Driscoll says a long-term goal is to make the site a campus for all things animals by collaborating with other organizations in Juneau.
Whether that's working with the Capital City Kennel Club or working with Parks and Recreation on a dog park or working with Trail Mix to perhaps do some kind of cool trails out there, the sky's the limit.
Under the approved lease agreement, the shelter will pay $10 a year for the 35-year lease. Driscoll says the organization will share more about the design and fundraising needs for the new shelter as soon as possible. Meanwhile, cold winter air can really dry out skin, and in Alaska, extra cold air can make the problem worse. For Alaska Public Media's new series, Alaska Survival Kit, Hannah Flora learns how to keep your skin hydrated even when the temperatures dip.
Mackenzie Rose spends a lot of time putting on lotion in the winter.
I feel like people with really dry skin live on like a different plane of existence.
Her husband, Simon, does not live on that same plane, and he doesn't use moisturizer.
I wonder, Mackenzie, if you were to go a week without using any of your lotions and potions, like what your skin would look like?
It would look like a desiccated, shriveled up gardening glove that was like left out over winter that you've just uncovered underneath like 3 feet of snow.
Mackenzie says moisturizer makes a huge difference. Simon says it's a scam. Full disclosure, these two are my roommates. I hear this kind of thing a lot. I try not to take sides. But still, I did wonder, how much is in Mackenzie's head? Does winter weather really make your skin drier? My face has been feeling very tight lately. I think it's time to ask someone who knows what they're talking about. I visit a dermatologist.
You heard from Dr. Miller?
Dr. Janine Miller owns Miller Dermatology in Anchorage. She says dry skin is common during cold Alaskan winters.
As it gets colder outside, the humidity drops. It's not very good for your skin.
Miller says just how much the dry air affects you comes down to genetics. Everyone is different. For people with dry skin, she says there's a lot you can do and avoid doing. After my appointment, I have 4 big takeaways. And because I personally like to hear bad news first, I'm going to start with the bummer. Here's number 1.
In the wintertime, I recommend against very hot showers.
Lukewarm is best. I know. I don't want to believe it either. But Miller says that hot water is stripping moisture from your skin. Takeaway 2 was equally as surprising to me. Miller says lotion is actually not your friend. I was confused. But it turns out that moisturizer is not synonymous with lotion. Lotion is a kind of moisturizer, a kind that Miller does not recommend.
I'm not saying that every single lotion is bad, but on average, most lotions have some type of alcohol derivative in them, and that is what tends to dry out the skin or irritate the skin in the winter.
Instead of lotion, look for thicker, unscented creams or ointments, or Miller's favorite, oil in a spray bottle. She uses jojoba. She says it's the closest thing to the oils our bodies produce. And Miller says timing is key.
As soon as you are done showering, while your skin is still damp, still moist, apply your moisturizer.
Next up, takeaway 3. Hydrate from the outside in by using a humidifier.
I explain to my patients that it's really important to do it at night because it's usually about 8 hours where they can be in a humidified environment.
Our final takeaway is all about keeping the moisture in once you've managed to hydrate your skin. Miller says a petroleum-based ointment like Aquaphor or Vaseline can act as a barrier.
How much are we talking here? Is it like I run across somebody out on the trails and I'm like, what happened
to your face? They've got a shiny face.
Yeah.
Some people shiny face it.
Miller says it's not necessary to goop it on. A thin layer will do. And it's not for everyone. It can cause breakouts for acne-prone skin. At home, Mackenzie's excited to hear what I learned from the dermatologist. I'm a little nervous. I already checked her lotion. It has alcohol. I sit her down. Her husband, Simon, listens in, invested. I try to break it to her gently.
Dr. Miller does not recommend using lotions.
What? How come?
Because alcohol is drying.
What? Wait, so I've been drying out my skin this whole time?
We read the labels on Mackenzie's products and on mine. I tell her about shiny facing it and humidifiers and hot showers. I play her bits of my conversation with Miller. Simon wanders off to bed. Mackenzie says, yeah, she feels betrayed by her lotions and potions, but she's also excited to do a little shopping. Now she knows what she's looking for. Some things, though, won't change.
Will you be taking lukewarm showers?
That's a hard no.
I'm with her on that one. In Anchorage, I'm Hannah Floor.
Finally tonight, we have a correction to the story on winter tourism that aired on Tuesday. The story initially said travel experts expected a strong winter tourism season in Alaska. Experts are actually expecting a softer season compared to last year due to economic uncertainty. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org and wherever you get your podcasts. We had reports tonight from Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C., Patrick Gilchrist and Tim Ellis in Fairbanks, Ashlyn O'Hara in Kenai, Hunter Morrison in Ketchikan, Alex Solomon and Clarice Larson in Juneau, and Hannah Floor in Anchorage. If you want to send us a news tip, question, or comment, email us at news@alaskapublic.org. Our audio engineer is Crystal Hyde, Madeline Rose is our producer, and I'm Wesley Early. Good night.
This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.